Welcome to the very first podcast of The Wedding DJ, a story of love and music in the 1980s. On Saturday afternoon, Jacob took the lead and guided Chris, Webb, and Emily around the side of the house in a follow-the-leader line.
Hey, Jacob. What's with the crows?
What?
Look up.
Whoa. Must be 100 up there.
This can't be normal.
Nope, pretty bizarre.
It's like they're all lined up for a show.
Right, a show at Jacob's house. Give me a break.
So, where are we going?
You know, the thing he's been blabbering about this past week at school.
Right, the thing that he can't shut up about.
We're going to my dad's garage, so be quiet.
What's the deal?
I don't want my dad to know we're here, so keep your voices down.
Keep your voices down.
So, what's your dad doing?
Probably watching the game.
Oh.
Where are we going?
The garage. Hey, pay attention.
The garage. Sounds creepy to me.
Don't get any ideas, girl.
Yeah, you wish.
This way. Ooh, don't slam the gate.
Why is he whispering?
I don't know.
Got me.
Better watch your step on the grass. Might be some dog poo.
Disgusting. Totally disgusting.
They crossed the lawn and went to the concrete slab next to the oversized two-car garage. Jacob opened the squeaky door.
It's over here in the back. Follow me.
Why all the cloak and dagger stuff?
What have you brought us to look at?
It's over there. See the green camouflage tarp?
Man, that is filthy dusty.
That pallet looks shot too. It's seen better days.
Okay, so what's the deal?
Well, I'll tell you. For some time now, my Uncle Kevin has told me stories about my dad and a trip he took to LA back in the mid-80s. Supposedly, my dad went to try to get a record deal, but wound up as a disc jockey. Underneath this tarp is a travel trunk that contains the equipment he used while working as a wedding DJ.
Interest in the contents accentuated. All four wanted to see what the DJ equipment looked like and wanted to check out if the gear still worked after years of storage. Jacob moved the trunk into position so they would all have room to take a look inside. Chris and Webb jockeyed for position behind Jacob, attempting a better viewpoint. Their movement only infuriated Emily, who felt mistreated by her male counterparts who were hogging up the area right behind Jacob. The trunk had no locks or constraints to stop anyone from opening it up, so Jacob easily propped up the top, exposing the inside. A linen bedsheet covered the contents, and once Jacob flung it off and away, there it was. His dad's Denon CD players, the DJ mixer, a wireless mic and receiver, and tons of CDs and various cables. And at that moment, it was as if Pandora's box had been compromised.
Whoa!
Yo, I know, right?
Man. Dang!
Holy, check it out!
Whoa!
You guys seeing this?
Wow!
Whoa! Oh,
wow! Yeah.
Jeez!
Whoa!
From the time young Jacob turned 10, Kevin had told him little bits and pieces about his dad. Every year he added something new to the mysterious stories of what happened in California in 1986. Jacob knew his dad played the guitar, but hearing about the DJ stuff was over the top. This was intoxicating information. With all that accumulative knowledge simmering in his brain, sometimes when the family was seated at the dinner table, he would look at his dad and wonder what it must have been like back then. But nothing came straight from the source. Dad remained coy, silent on the subject. The stories Kevin told about his father's DJ escapades produced a keen inquisitiveness with Jacob, folklorist and legendary, all at the same time. So much so that season after season, not opening the trunk became too much to bear. Finally, with the contents revealed, Jacob, Chris, Webb, and Emily stood there, open-mouthed and speechless, for at least a minute looking down at the equipment, thunderstruck and unsure of what to do next. Fourteen years earlier, on a brisk Thursday evening, Jason and Kevin, along with their fellow bandmates, Harry, who played lead guitar, and Jimmy, who played drums, were just finishing up with band rehearsal.
The new songs are really sounding great.
Yeah. Hey, I think the crowd's gonna dig them. You know, they're all real good dance tunes.
See, it doesn't take that much practicing, Harry.
Right.
Hey, Harry, what's with Jason? He's looking a bit stoic over there, don't you think?
The way he's strumming that guitar of his, it's like David playing the harp to soothe the soul of King Saul.
Earth to Jason. Calling Earth to Jason. Hey, the three of us were wondering exactly which world and galaxy you're visiting.
Really? Is he okay? I find his mood rather concerning.
Maybe it has something to do with Sally. You think they got in a fight or something?
Jimmy, I've known the guy for just about my entire life, and I've never seen Jason quite like this before.
Since starting the band during their days back in high school, the boys had dreams, like many others, of becoming rock and roll stars, being rich and famous. Over the years, though, reality settled in, and they resolved themselves to being grateful for the weekend bar gigs they managed to keep over the last number of years. Still, that lost expression on Jason's face said so much. It was the dream that had now diverted into a distant fantasy. The concept of being so-called rock stars had come to be a thing of the past. The current state of affairs in Jason's mind was now going through fermentation, and an enzymatic, controlled anaerobic breakdown was about to reach its bubbling point. The thought process was overwhelming. The whole kit and caboodle, life. At 27 years old, Jason was acutely handsome and lean, standing nearly 6 feet tall. Likeability was his trademark. Others found it so natural and uncomplicated to be his friend and just hang with him. Now, maybe it was because most everything that came his way came quite easily, perhaps too effortlessly. Unlike his older brother, John, who seemed to possess an endless, relentless drive. Jason's journey, for the most part, didn't go very far. His pursuit of higher education amounted to attending community college for 4 years on a part-time basis, belatedly finishing with an AA degree. Either laziness or lost interest was to blame for not continuing for his bachelor's. And without a 4-year degree, the possibility of securing a decent job at a higher income level diminished. He was relegated to working at the market, a position he had since high school. His recent promotion to assistant manager was more to do with his likability factor than any accreditation or degree. Consequently, his paycheck did not reflect much of a substantial pay increase. Jason's efforts at music also lacked discipline. He never made it a habit to practice his guitar on a regular basis to keep developing his ability. Instead, he took the painless path, learning songs that were simple and easy to play, but he possessed so much more potential. He excelled in the pop, rock and roll genres. When it came to other music styles, Jason acted as if he couldn't be bothered, even though he enjoyed swing, big band, standards, and more. And not that it's mandatory to read music, but Jason never did, even though his mother, who played the piano throughout her life, encouraged him to do so, illuminating the benefits and stating that someday it will come in very handy to him. But upon hearing the same rhetoric over and over again, Jason shrugged it off. It was just more work, and he wasn't willing to put forth the necessary labor and effort. Yet, there was an intimate side to Jason that validated his music ability when he wrote songs. The compositions contained the easiness of being Jason's friend. For the most part, he kept the tunes hidden, except to the closest of friends. Kevin knew Jason's personal artistic quality the best, and encouraged him to show that creative side with sensitivity and imagination. Jason's particular taste gravitated toward artists like James Taylor, Jackson Browne and Harry Nilsson. He had a particular affinity to the music of Sam Cooke. He was in love with how the man sang so effortlessly, and he tried his best to emulate Cooke's voice whenever possible. Subsequently, many of the songs he wrote moved in the style of those singer-songwriter artists. He reveled in the songwriting process, building a modest collection of 30 or so songs. Some had amusing lyrics, a few were very serious, but most of them were love songs written straight from the heart. However, it seemed like the band could not get a handle on playing Jason's original material. Maybe the songs just weren't right for the group, or perhaps the guys lacked the technical musicianship. Nonetheless, Kevin and the other band members were in awe of Jason's talent and ability as a singer-songwriter. They all agreed that some of the songs could go places, but how to make it happen, how to go about getting it done was the challenge.
Hey, Jason, what's going on in that mind of yours? Have you taken a flight to Jupiter? It's like you're a million light years away.
Sorry, I'm trying to find answers. It's been rolling around my mind for some time now, and it's bothering me in a big way.
What kind of answers, Jason? What are you talking about?
Look, you rarely spill your guts, man. You're always Mr. Private all the time.
I know. I'm not the most congenial one when it comes to personal stuff. It takes time to process stuff.
Process what? What stuff? Man, what's eating you up today?
Kevin cared about Jason as deeply as if they were brothers, to a great degree because they had known each other for so very long, since grade school, and had shared so many experiences together, their affection for each other transcended biological brotherhood. It was not uncommon at all for one to go the extra mile for the other. Kevin had honest concern for his friend and yearned to help him unravel the puzzle going on inside of him.
Is it something with Sally? Because if you and Sally...
Nah, she's great. She's always great.
Is it something to do with the band? The new songs?
No, man. The band is good. The songs sound good.
So, what is it, Jason? What's going on inside that thick skull of yours?
You know, I've been thinking lately.
Yeah, thinking. Thinking about what?
Is this all there is? Is this my lot in life? Isn't there something more?
Jason was having a moment at the intersection where dreams and reality collide, and the ugly truth was rearing its face smack dab in front of Jason. In the converted garage of Kevin's parents' home, where the guys had been practicing since high school, Jason sat in his chair, sulking, experiencing an epiphany flash. Like a volcano about to erupt, one could feel the threat of rumblings. Deep within Jason's core, there was an understanding of something gone so wrong, so unresolved. It was making its way to the surface. And to be clear, this unusual sudden manifestation, this intuitive grasp of reality, this illuminating discovery was more crystalline now than it had ever been before in his life. As the adapted saying goes, the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. No matter how carefully planned the project, something could still go wrong. In Jason's life, it was more like, no one plans to fail. They just fail to plan. His likability and easy way of getting through life was not making the grade. Looking around at the walls of the room where the band practiced, one could see that there was once a time filled with endless imagination. The guys converted the garage themselves, coming after school, collecting pieces of carpet samples and remnants, egg carton containers, and anything else they could get their hands on that didn't cost them any money. They made the walls almost look like art pieces, taking the carpet samples and egg cartons and attaching them to the walls in abstract geometric designs. When friends came by to listen to their band practice, often they commented on how wild and crazy the design on the walls turned out. It proved to be an extra bit of inspiration for the band, and over time, it made practicing that much more enjoyable. But now, after nearly 10 years of gathering at the same location, and with not much to show for themselves other than their measly little bar gig on the weekends, where some folks would say the pay was insulting, Jason was at a crossroads.
Go on.
I've had this overwhelming feeling there is more out there. More than just being here in Kokomo. Not that Kokomo is such a terrible place, because it's not. Life is pretty good here. I guess I just want more. I just want more.
I'm listening to you, brother. I think we all want more.
I'm looking ahead, and I don't see much in terms of our band going beyond the bar gig every Friday and Saturday night. I mean, really, what can Kokomo offer us? As musicians, looking down the road, it's not that much. And Sally, I know she wants to get married, and I'd love to marry her too. But it takes money to make all this happen.
Yeah, you're right about that. It takes money, and you can only go so far in a place like this.
Man, you're in a pickle.
Yeah. Is it dill or gherkin, huh?
Oh my god, Jim. Come on, dude. Really?
Okay.
I'm a gherkin you.
Mm-hmm. Very funny, guys.
Jason, you've always been the most talented. You got the singing voice. You play decent. On the other hand, the rest of us barely get by on our instruments. It's not that we're bad. We're just not that good, either.
Hey, it's not about you guys. It's about me.
He had talent. That was never the issue. His singing voice, especially when he sang the high notes, caused the girls in the club to go crazy. And consequently, they desired him biblically. But Jason always stayed true to Sally. She was the one who rocked his world. Jason met Sally during his senior year in high school. Being the semi-jock basketball player, musician, and Mr. Likeable, he was on the radar of all the girls at school. But Sally won his heart by being the most honest, sincere, down-to-earth person of them all. It didn't hurt that she was absolutely adorable with farmer's daughter looks, long blonde hair, powder blue eyes, standing 5'2". Jason's parents, Sally's parents, all their friends were confident that destiny would lead to getting married, having children, and living happily ever after, just like a fairy tale. The only problem, and it was a humongous one, was Jason's inauspicious position of his own doing. He didn't even make enough money to live on his own, let alone get married and support a wife and kids. His income level was pathetic, to put it mildly. Jason's world was not rocking and rolling. He felt as though he wasn't going anywhere. He was stifled, and who could blame him? There was only so much one could do with a band playing a couple nights a week at the local bar and working at the neighborhood market for not much more than a notch above minimum wage. There's only so much a guy can take. There are limits to these situations. In Jason's case, he had reached those limits. He was looking beyond, far beyond, where he had been, what he had done, what he had not done, what he had achieved, and most of all, what he had not accomplished, and that was far greater than all the rest. Some people are content with the way things are. Some people are just satisfied with having a job and a steady income. It would be enough for some people, but Jason did not see this to be his lot in life. His dreams, his aspirations of being somebody, had come out of hibernation. The sleeping giant was waking, and right now, there was no more pretending. Jason's passion was rising to the surface like it never had before. He needed to unlock that desire held deep inside, the yearning that was burning just below the surface of the skin. But what Jason required more than anything else at this given moment, at this little moment in time, more than a better job, more than all the musical talent one could have, more than money, and even more than love, he needed a plan. It was then that Kevin looked over at Jason and gave him a devilish smile.
Jason, do you trust me?
Of course.
No, I mean, do you really trust me?
Of course I do.
Do you trust me without question?
Yes, yes, I trust you.
All right, so listen to me and hear me out. I have a musician friend, someone who I've probably mentioned in past conversations. My friend offered to help the band if we ever got out to L.A. My friend has connections in the music business.
Why are you telling me this?
Kevin just kept smiling back at Jason like a Cheshire cat. In the momentary pause, Jimmy and Harry caught the drift of where Kevin was leading. And then all of the sudden, Jason yelled back.
You are crazy. You are absolutely crazy.
Mm-mm. You should go to L.A., to Hollywood. That's what you need to do. Jason, you're my best friend. I care about you like a brother. So please get this through that thick skull of yours. There comes a time in life to take a chance, to create opportunity. Seize the moment, and this is such a time. Furthermore, if there's one person in this group who has a chance to make it, to be successful in the music business, with the possibility of maybe becoming a rock star, it's you, my friend.
I don't think it's any surprise, and we're all going to tell you, you're the one with the most talent.
You got the singing voice, too.
Really? You think so?
I not only think so, I know so. You gotta unlock these wasted nights!
So it was decided, right then and there, that Jason would make a move to L.A., for if he were going to make a name for himself in the music business, it certainly wouldn't happen in Kokomo, Indiana. He was L.A. bound. Now the only questions remaining were when and how would Sally take the news. You've been listening to an episode of The Wedding DJ, a story of love and music in the 1980s. The Wedding DJ is written, produced, and directed, and narrated by David Murray Adelstein.
You're ugly.
Thank you.